The 10 Dharma realms are not beyond a single thought. Explained by the Venerable Master Hua in 1972 at Gold Mountain Dhyana Monastery, San Francisco, USA. Verse: if anyone wishes to understand all Buddhas of the three periods of time, he should contemplate the nature of the Dharma realm. The Tathagatas are made from the mind alone. Commentary: if anyone wishes to understand all people of the three periods of time, he should contemplate the nature of the Dharma realm. The Tathagatas are made from the mind alone. Are you laughing because I read it wrong? If anyone wishes to understand. Suppose there are people who wish to understand how people become people. All people of the three periods of time. Shouldn't it be all Buddhas of the three periods of time? Why did you say all people of the three periods of time? You ask. People are Buddhas. If you call a person a Buddha, that's okay. And if you call the Buddha a person, that's okay too. Why is this? Because a person can become a Buddha. A Buddha is just a person who has realized Buddhahood. If you talk about Buddhas, no one really understands, so we'll talk about people and it will become easier to understand. Who are the people we're discussing? The Buddhas. Am I a Buddha? You ask. You are. Are other people Buddhas? Yes, they are too. You are a Buddha, but an unrealized Buddha. After your realization, you will become a true Buddha. Now you are a false Buddha. False Buddhas can become true Buddhas, and true Buddhas can become false Buddhas. If anyone wishes to understand all Buddhas of the three periods of time, the verse starts with a word, if, to indicate that this is only a hypothetical situation. Don't be attached and think it's real. The Buddhas of the three periods of time are just people who have realized Buddhahood. He should contemplate the nature of the Dharma realm. How can the Dharma realm have a nature? If it had a nature, how could it be called the Dharma realm? Actually, this refers to the nature of the living beings in the Dharma realm. Every living being of the Dharma realm has its own nature. You have your nature, and I have my nature. I don't know what you mean by nature, you say. Well, your temper is bigger than mine, and mine is deeper than yours. Thus, our natures are different. Each living being in the Dharma realm has its own nature. Pigs have the nature of pigs. Horses have the nature of horses. Men have the nature of men. And women have the nature of women. Each has his or her own nature. Those who like to eat sweet things have a sweet nature. Those who like to eat sour things have a sour nature. Those who like hot, spicy things have a hot nature. Those who like to eat bitter things have a bitter nature, like all of us here. Note: in Chinese, the same character means both bitter and ascetic. We cultivate ascetic practices. Cultivation is ascetic practice. Even going to the dining hall to eat is an ascetic practice. When it comes to ascetic practices, none of you should fall behind. You should race toward the front. In the ascetic practice of eating, all of you race toward the front, don't you? If you look into it, you'll find that everything has its own nature. Trees have the nature of trees. Flowers have the nature of flowers. Grass has the nature of grass. Each thing has its own nature. So, the nature of the Dharma realm refers to the nature of each living being in the Dharma realm. Do you understand? Previously, you thought that the Dharma realm had a nature, but now you know this is referring to the nature of living beings in the Dharma realm. The Tathagatas are made from the mind alone. The original verse from the Avatamsaka Sutra said, "If anyone wishes to understand all Buddhas of the three periods of time, he should contemplate the nature of the Dharma realm. Everything is made from the mind alone." I changed the second line to say, "all people of the three periods of time." And I also changed the last line to "the Tathagatas are made from the mind alone." Buddhas are created from the mind. If your mind cultivates the Buddha Dharma, you will become a Buddha. If your mind likes the Bodhisattvas, you can practice the Bodhisattva way and become a Bodhisattva. If your mind wants to fall into the hells, you are bound to fall. The Dharma realm of Buddhas. Verse: neither great nor small, neither gone nor come, in worlds as many as motes of dust, they shine upon each other from their lotus thrones. Commentary: the first Dharma realm is that of Buddhas. I once gave a lecture in Redwood City, California, in which I explained the word Buddha. Because I'm quite dull and a bit deaf, when I first heard the word Buddha in English, I heard it as Buddha, which means not big in Chinese. What is not big? The Buddha. One professor liked my explanation so much that when I finished my lecture, he put his palms together and said to me, "Buddha." Not big means not arrogant. The Buddha is not arrogant or haughty. An arrogant person is someone who is always saying, I. The Buddha doesn't have an I, an ego. Me. Everything is me. Everything to the right, left, in front, back, above, below, and throughout the four directions is me. There are too many me's, and so the self becomes big. The Buddha, being selfless, is not big. Then is he little? No. If he were little, he wouldn't be a Buddha. He is neither great nor small. Neither gone nor come. The Buddha has come and yet not come, gone and yet not gone. Since the Buddha's Dharma body fills all of space and pervades the Dharma realm, it is neither absent nor present. You may speak of the Buddha as going, but to where does he go? You might say he comes, but from where does he come? Nor does his Dharma body merely pervade one world. The Dharma realm includes as many worlds as there are motes of dust, limitlessly, boundlessly many worlds, all of which are the Buddha's Dharma body. In worlds as many as motes of dust. They shine upon each other from their lotus thrones. The Buddha in this Dharma realm shines his light upon the Buddha of another Dharma realm, and the light of the Buddha in that Dharma realm illumines this Dharma realm. Sitting on lotus thrones, the Buddhas simultaneously move the earth and emit light from their ears, eyes, noses, tongues, and teeth. Not only do their six organs put forth light and move the earth, their every pore emits light and moves the earth. And in every pore, worlds as numerous as motes of dust appear, each containing incalculable numbers of Buddhas who emit light in the same way. Yet, all these lights, like those of many lamps, do not contend. One lamp doesn't say to another, "You can't give off so much light because my light has nowhere to go." The lights don't clash with one another. They fuse together. In Buddhism, we unite our lights. Just as lights do not conflict with one another, so too should people not clash. We should allow our lights to shine on one another, like the lights interpenetrating in the interstices of the infinitely layered circular net canopy of the great Brahma Heaven King. That's the Dharma realm of Buddhas. The Dharma realm of Bodhisattvas. Verse. Sentient beings, when enlightened, leap out of the dust. Their six perfections and 10,000 practices at all times are nurtured. Commentary. The second Dharma realm is that of Bodhisattvas. Why did I say all people of the three periods of time above? It's because people can cultivate to go to any of the 10 Dharma realms. Yet people are not beyond a single thought of the mind. The Sanskrit word bodhisattva is translated as enlightened being and has two meanings. 1. One who causes all sentient beings to become enlightened. 2. An enlightened one among all sentient beings. We are included in both meanings. We all have a share of bodhisattvahood because we are all beings. We can become enlightened ones among beings, and we can teach other beings to become enlightened as well. So being a bodhisattva isn't bad. Not only do we have a share of bodhisattvahood, we also have a share of Buddhahood. "I don't get it," you say. "Dharma Master, you said earlier that Buddhas are just people who have realized Buddhahood. Well, why haven't we become Buddhas?" Let's not talk about people becoming Buddhas. Consider a small child who grows up, becomes an adult, and eventually gets old. We are like children within the Buddha Dharma, and the Buddha is an adult. When we grow up, we will become Buddhas. But right now we are still children in Buddhism. As youngsters need milk, we constantly need the nourishment of hearing the Dharma. Listening to the Dharma is an especially good way to make our good roots grow and to bring forth our wisdom. An opportunity to listen to the Dharma is more valuable than any amount of money you could earn. Today, I'm going to make a rule. I hope that from now on, all of you will not take so many holidays and go on so many trips. Take the study of the Buddha Dharma as your trip. Spend your holidays studying the Buddha Dharma. Why do I say this? Because it's very dangerous to travel. Every holiday there are many fatalities, and if you travel, you might end up being one of them. We want to change the trends of this country. The people in this country are fond of recreation and travel. Buddhists should not take so many vacations. We can use this time to study the Buddha Dharma. Even better, we can chant sutras, recite mantras, and bow to the Buddhas. There is infinite merit and virtue in bowing to the Buddhas. Bowing before the Buddhas can eradicate offenses as numerous as Ganges sands. If you bow to the Buddhas, you can cancel as many offenses as there are grains of sand in the Ganges River. It is also said, giving a single penny brings limitless blessings. However, I'm certainly not asking for money from you. You should understand that. You can make contributions to other temples and earn great blessings that way. We here are so wretched that we don't have the blessings to receive offerings. If we accept too many offerings, we might die. If no one makes offerings, maybe we can live a few days more. Despite the suffering, we still wish to live a little longer. We don't want to die yet. Therefore, if you wish to give money, you can give it to other places. There are plenty of places where you can plant blessings. You don't have to do it at Gold Mountain Monastery, because Gold Mountain Monastery has only wretched people with few blessings. If you seek blessings here, you'll be disappointed. But don't worry, we won't starve. Sentient beings, when enlightened, leap out of the dust. Their 6 perfections and 10,000 practices at all times are nurtured. A bodhisattva is a sentient being among sentient beings. He's an enlightened one. Among the enlightened, he's one who understands. Among those who understand, he's a cultivator. Among cultivators, he's one who truly practices. A bodhisattva leaps out of the dust. If he did not have understanding, he wouldn't be able to transcend the defilement. The dust would be so thick that he wouldn't be able to leap out of it. When he becomes enlightened, the dust thins out and he can leap out of it. After a bodhisattva leaps out of the dust, what does he do? Sleep and eat? Yes, he still sleeps, eats, and wears clothes, but he no longer works like a slave to provide his body with food, clothing, and a place to live. When you get out of the dust, you cease to be concerned with these 3 problems, and instead you concentrate on cultivating the 6 perfections: giving, holding precepts, patience, vigor, concentration, and wisdom. I know what the perfection of giving entails. It involves telling others to make offerings to me. Some of you are thinking, wrong. It is learning to give to other people. As for money, it would be nice to shred it up. We shouldn't want so much of that filthy stuff. Money is an extremely defiling possession, and too much involvement with it is what is meant by dust. If you don't want money, then you will be extremely pure and will be able to transcend the dust. Some of you have now transcended the dust because you are holding the precept of not handling money. However, make sure you don't get contaminated by money again in the future. You should also cultivate the 10,000 practices and nurture them at all times. You cannot say, I'll cultivate today, but not tomorrow. I'll cultivate this year, but not next year. I'll cultivate this month and take a rest next month. I'll cultivate this life, but not next life. To cultivate one moment and sleep the next moment won't work. At all times, you should nurture your cultivation of the 6 perfections and 10,000 practices. Cultivate them in life after life. If you practice in this way, you will be a bodhisattva. That's not easy, you say. Did you think that being a bodhisattva would be easy? Not only is it not easy to be a bodhisattva, it's not easy to be a Shravaka or a Pratyekabuddha either. Then what is it easy to be? It is easy to be a ghost, to go to the hells, or to become an animal. If you want things to be easy, you can be those beings. If you want to be a bodhisattva, it won't be easy. You say it's difficult. The word difficult describes what bodhisattvas do. Bodhisattvas must be able to do what others cannot do. They must endure what others find difficult to endure. When people consider a job too difficult, they say, "That's all right, we'll handle it." They are not put off by difficult tasks. If you don't dare to do what is hard, you are not a bodhisattva. Go forth with vigor. That's what a bodhisattva is like. There is no other esoteric or wonderful secret. If you can do the things that other people cannot do, you are a bodhisattva. The Dharma realm of those enlightened to conditions. Verse. The holy sages enlightened to conditions doze high on mountain peaks alone. Springtime's flowers wither in the fall in a cycle of 12 interconnecting links. Commentary. Why am I asking you all these questions? Those enlightened to conditions, Pratyekabuddhas, don't like questions. They are recluses who don't like to be around other people. Today we are looking into the question of everyone being together, so you should not act like those enlightened to conditions. When there is a Buddha in the world, they are called those enlightened to conditions. When there is no Buddha in the world, they are called solitarily enlightened ones because they are able to become enlightened by themselves. What do they like to do? They like to sleep in solitude on the mountain peaks. The holy sages enlightened to conditions doze high on mountain peaks alone. Springtime's flowers wither in the fall in a cycle of 12 interconnecting links. Speaking of those enlightened to conditions, we should also become enlightened to causes and conditions. They cultivate the 12 causes and conditions. We, however, are cultivated by the 12 causes and conditions. The first of the 12 causes and conditions is ignorance. They contemplate ignorance. Where does it come from? Strange. How can there be ignorance? Then they see that ignorance leads to activity. With the manifestation of activity, consciousness appears. Consciousness involves discrimination. Activity is a conditioned dharma, while ignorance is neither conditioned nor unconditioned. It is between the two. Why are discriminations made? Because of conditioned dharmas. The discriminating mind is a result of conditioned dharmas. With the discriminating mind, the trouble starts. Name and form are the trouble. Name brings the trouble of name, and form brings the trouble of form. If I didn't talk about them, there wouldn't be any problem. Just mentioning them is asking for trouble because you're bound to say, How are name and form troublesome? I don't understand. Before I said anything, you didn't have the problem. Once I began talking, the problem of your not understanding arose, and with it came the desire to know. This quest of knowledge results in the use of the six sense faculties. See? The six sense faculties come into being because of the wish to understand. Have you ever heard such an explanation? No one has explained it this way before. When you decide you want to know, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind appear. You think you can gain understanding through them without realizing that the more you want to understand, the more confused you become. And the more confused you are, the less you understand. Since you don't understand, you seek contact. You go around making contact at random, east, west, south, north, above, below, like a fly madly bouncing off the walls. Why does it bounce off the walls? Because it wants to understand. Contact is just bumping up against things, going everywhere bouncing off the walls. You go everywhere hoping to understand, but all that results from this desperate attempt is a lot of bruises. After the determination to understand sets in and encounters occur, there is feeling. Ow, that hurts! Or, ah, I'm so comfortable. Right now I'm not bumping into things and I feel really good. But when you bump against something, you don't feel good at all. You feel happy if no one is telling you that you're not nice. But you get upset when you hear someone criticize you. This is where feeling lies. It cannot be found outside. Once there is feeling, craving and attachment arise. You give rise to craving and attachment for pleasant situations, but you feel aversion for unpleasant environments. Happiness and unhappiness come from craving and aversion, and so every day the trouble grows. The holy sages, enlightened to conditions, doze high on mountain peaks alone. Springtime's flowers wither in the fall, in a cycle of 12 interconnecting links. The myriad things grow and prosper in the springtime, so the Pratika Buddha sages contemplate and realize that everything undergoes the natural process of birth and death. They contemplate the hundreds of flowers blossoming in the springtime and watch the dry leaves fall in the autumn. They contemplate the 12 causes and conditions. Now we come to craving. The reason people feel unsettled is because of craving. Once there is craving, there is also aversion. You grasp at those things that you crave. What is meant by grasping? It means wanting to get a hold of something. Because you have craving, you then want to obtain those objects in order to fulfill your desires. Thus, grasping leads to becoming. Once you have these things for your own, there is further birth, which leads to old age and death. These are the 12 causes and conditions cultivated by those enlightened to conditions. The Dharma realm of hearers. Verse. The Shravaka disciples, both men and women, contemplate and practice the Four Noble Truths, concealing the real and displaying the expedient. Commentary. There are hearers, Shravakas, of the first fruition, the second fruition, the third fruition, and the fourth fruition. This Dharma realm is further divided into A. Those approaching the first fruition who have not yet realized the fruition. B. Those who have realized first fruition. C. those approaching the second fruition. D. Those who have realized the second fruition. E. Those approaching the third fruition. F. Those who have realized the third fruition. G. Those approaching the fourth fruition. And H. Those who have realized the fourth fruition. Hearers are also called arhats. Arhats can fly and transform themselves, and they possess supernatural powers. One should not casually claim that he has attained the fruition, saying, "I'm an arhat." That is not allowed. When a sage who has attained the fruition walks, his feet do not touch the ground. Although he appears to be walking on the road, he is actually traveling in the air. His feet do not touch the ground or the dirt. Even if he walks across mud, his shoes remain clean. Dharma Master Du Xun, the first patriarch of the Huayan school, for example, was one whose shoes weren't soiled when he walked over mud. This is the sign of a sage who has attained the fruition. One cannot casually claim to have attained the fruition. Hearers of the first fruition have eliminated view delusions. Those of the second fruition eliminate thought delusions. At the level of the third fruition, they eliminate delusions in number like dust and sand. The hearer of the fourth fruition has partially, though not completely, eliminated ignorance. Only one who has completely destroyed ignorance realizes Buddhahood. For even a bodhisattva at the stage of equal enlightenment still has a small amount of ignorance of arising phenomena which keeps him from realizing Buddhahood. What dharmas do sages of the fourth fruition cultivate? Everyone knows the dharmas they cultivate. We've all heard them before. They are suffering, the cause of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and the way to the cessation of suffering. In the beginning, Shakyamuni Buddha went to the deer park to teach those people who were to become the first five bhikshus. This included the venerable Ajnata Kaundinya and the venerable Ashvajit. These five people were, in fact, relatives of the Buddha. They had followed the Buddha to practice, but some of them couldn't endure the hardship. When Shakyamuni Buddha was cultivating in the Himalayas, he became as thin as a stick because he ate only one sesame seed and one grain of wheat each day. Three of his followers found this unbearable and fled in hunger, and only two remained. Later, on the eighth day of the 12th lunar month, a heavenly maiden offered some milk to Shakyamuni Buddha, and he accepted it. At that point, the other two followers left as well, not because they couldn't stand the hardship, but because they felt that the Buddha didn't know how to practice. They said, "You're supposed to be cultivating ascetic practices, and yet you drank milk. That shows you aren't able to cultivate and endure hardship." Therefore, they left as well. All five of them went to the deer park. After Shakyamuni Buddha became a Buddha, he first spoke the Avatamsaka Sutra, which very few beings were able to understand. He then concealed the true and offered the expedient teaching, and he spoke the Agama Sutras. "Whom should I teach?" the Buddha wondered. Then he recalled, "Previously, I had five fellow cultivators who supported my practice. I should teach them first, because in the past, I vowed that when I became a Buddha, I would first teach those who had slandered me, killed me, or treated me badly." Who had treated the Buddha the worst? If you've read the Vajra Sutra, you'll know about King Kali. On the causal ground, when Shakyamuni Buddha was cultivating as a patient immortal, King Kali had chopped off the limbs of his body. Why? In that previous life, Shakyamuni Buddha was a skilled cultivator. His body was covered with a thick layer of dust and dirt, and he never went down the mountain. He remained there cultivating ascetic practices. One day, King Kali took his concubines, his wives, along on a deer hunt. The women accompanied him into the mountains, but had no interest in hunting with the king. They wanted to have fun on their own. While strolling around in the mountains, they came upon a strange creature. They weren't quite sure what it was. Its eyebrows were 3 inches long, and its hair was 2 feet long. Its face seemed to have never been washed, for the dirt caked on it was extremely thick. The dirt on its clothing was at least an inch thick. When these women saw it, they couldn't figure out what it was. They said, "It's a monster. Let's get out of here." Then the cultivator said, "You don't have to leave. I'm not a monster." "It can speak," they gasped. One of the braver ones asked him, "What are you doing here?" He replied, "I'm cultivating." She asked, "What do you mean by cultivating?" He said, "I'm cultivating in order to become a Buddha." Then he taught them the Dharma. The women grew friendlier and expressed their concern. "You endure so much difficulty here. What do you eat?" He answered, "I eat whatever there is, roots and leaves. I don't go out asking for food from people." By that time, the women's fears vanished. One of them reached out to touch his eyebrows. Another touched his hands, and yet a third patted his face. They viewed the cultivator as something precious and tried to get closer to him. Meanwhile, King Kali had finished hunting and was looking for his concubines. He found them all gathered around something and tried to see what they were up to. He worked his way slowly toward them, not making a sound, and when he was close enough, he saw them talking with a very strange man. What is more, one was touching his hands, and another was patting his feet. Seeing them acting so friendly, the king immediately grew jealous. The cultivator was talking to his women about cultivation. In a rage, the king bellowed, "You have no business cheating my women. What are you cultivating?" The cultivator replied, "I'm cultivating patience." "And what do you mean by patience?" "I will never become angry at anyone who scolds or beats me." King Kali said, "You may have cheated my women into believing you, but I'll never believe you. You say you can be patient? Is that true?" The old cultivator said, "Of course." "All right, I'm going to give you a test." The king then drew his sword and chopped off the old cultivator's hand. He said, "I've just chopped off your hand. Do you hate me?" The cultivator said, "No." "You don't hate me? Then you really have some skill. But you must be lying. You just say you don't hate me, even though in your mind you do. You're lying. I'm a very smart person. You think you can fool me?" King Kali continued, "All right. Since you claim you are patient and don't hate me, I'm going to chop off your other hand." After chopping off the cultivator's other hand, the king asked, "Now do you hate me?" The old cultivator said, "No." The king then chopped off the cultivator's feet. Having hacked off the cultivator's 4 limbs, he asked, "Do you hate me?" "No," said the cultivator. "Not only do I not hate you, but when I accomplish Buddhahood, I will save you first. How can I convince you that I don't hate you? If I hate you, my 4 limbs will not be restored. And if I don't hate you, my hands and feet will be restored. even though you have completely severed them from my body. If they are restored, that will prove that I don't feel any hatred. If I feel any hatred, that will not occur." Whereupon the old cultivator became whole again. Having witnessed King Kali hack off the cultivator's hands and feet in such a cruel manner, the Dharma-protecting spirits manifested their great supernatural power and pelted the king with a shower of hailstones. Realizing the severity of his offense and seeing the cultivator's great spiritual powers, King Kali knelt before the cultivator seeking forgiveness. The cultivator said, "If I don't realize Buddhahood, there is nothing to be said. But if one day I do, I will save you first." That is why the Buddha first went to the deer park to teach Ajnata Kandinya, who had been King Kali in a former life. Because of his past vow, the Buddha first wanted to save the person who had treated him the worst. After hearing this story, we should all vow that after becoming Buddhas, we will first save those who treated us the worst. We shouldn't think, "You've been so mean to me, I'm going to send you to the hells after I become a Buddha." Don't make that kind of vow. When the Buddha went to the deer park, he spoke the three turnings of the Dharma wheel of the Four Noble Truths for the five bhikshus. First, he said, "This is suffering. It is oppressive. This is the cause of suffering. It beckons. This is the way. It can be cultivated. This is the cessation of suffering. It can be realized." The second time he said, "This is suffering. I have completely known it. This is the cause of suffering. I have completely eliminated it. This is the way. I have completely cultivated it. This is the cessation of suffering. I have completely realized it." During the third turning, he said, "This is suffering. You should know it. This is the cause of suffering. You should eliminate it. This is the way. You should cultivate it. This is the cessation of suffering. You should realize it." After the Buddha spoke the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths, he said to Ajnata Kandinya, "You are troubled by guest dust, transient defilements, and have not obtained liberation." When Ajnata Kandinya heard the words guest dust, he became enlightened and realized the transience of defiling objects. The guest is not the host, and the dust is unclean. My self-nature is the host, and it is clean and pure. Ajnata Kandinya is called one who understands the original limit. He understood the fundamental truth and became the foremost exponent of emptiness. The Four Noble Truths are infinite and inexhaustible. The Shravaka disciples, both men and women, both women and men can realize the fruition and become hearers or arhats. Dharma Master Kumarajiva's mother, for instance, became a third stage arhat. Hearers contemplate and practice the Four Noble Truths. They cultivate the Four Noble Truths: suffering, the cause of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and the way. This involves being aware of suffering, eliminating the cause of suffering, aiming for the cessation of suffering, and cultivating the way. They cultivate the Dharma door of the Four Noble Truths, concealing the real and displaying the expedient. You see them as hearers, but in reality they may be great bodhisattvas of the provisional teaching, who appear expediently as such. This is called concealing the real. They conceal their real merit and virtue. Displaying the expedient means they demonstrate skillful means. You should not write off all hearers as small vehicle cultivators and look down on them. They may be great bodhisattvas who have come back to the world. Not all of them are, but some of them are definitely great vehicle bodhisattvas who appear among those of the small vehicle to urge them to turn from the small and go towards the great. This is called concealing the real and displaying the expedient.